Hello, and welcome to Life an Inside Job. This episode is for anyone who is interested in how their body works. An essential listening for yoga bods, for body workers and movement therapists. In my physiology training back in the day, I had been taught that fascia was kind of like a wrapping that held our organs in place and wrapped the muscles and bones. And over the years, I've worked with it and touched it pretty much all my professional life. But it turns out, I discovered from this conversation that I've been holding a highly mechanical concept of what it is. And in our conversation, Joanne explains how fascia is in fact the fabric of our whole form. It's a sensory organ that holds and expresses our experience of life and our personality. Joanne is a former chocolatier who has become one of the most foremost teachers of structural anatomy. And she teaches that to movement, yoga people and body workers. And she's also a member of the Biotensegrity Interest Group, which I was very happy, it's very pleasingly shortened to BIG, to BIG, which is so sweet. Anyway, what they do is they investigate why we move the way we do. And Joanne's book, Yoga, Fascia, Anatomy and Movement, is now in its second edition. So if you're curious about what fascia is, how it works, how we can nourish it to live better, and even how to pronounce biotensegrity and what the hell that is, then stay tuned. Thank you, Joanne, for coming to talk to me. I have already got tingles. I've got the tingles because there is so much that we share and so much light that you can shed into some of the questions that I have about fascia. But to start with, could you say what it is, please? What is fascia?
What is fascia? Wow, what a fabulous question, Kate. Fascia is basically the word given to the connective tissue matrix of us. And traditionally, it was cut away. So in classical anatomy, when that became a thing about 400 years ago, a man called Vesalius was the first to do a human dissection because it was illegal under the church laws and so-called medical laws of the time. And that dissection, normally they did dissection on Barbary apes. And he was really the first person historically, he was a Belgian, but he was in Padua in Italy, to say, actually, we need to understand human bodies if we're going to do surgery and understand medicine for human bodies. They're not the same. He was the first person to challenge that formally. And the fascia was scraped out the way as inert packaging. Now, fascia, the word fascia means band or binding.
Mm-hmm.
So it was considered to be the scaffolding, the bandaging, the binding stuff that held the skin to the underneath and the underneath to itself. And the bones were separate to the muscles, were separate to the vessels, were separate to the glands and the organs and the parts, basically. So from that origin, which later got further confirmed by René Descartes, and what René Descartes did is he went to the Pope to get official sanction. This is all about the century after the Renaissance, during the Renaissance. He sought to get sanction from the Pope, special dispensation to make it formally permissible to use human cadaveric specimens for anatomical study for science. And the Pope, let me get this right, the Pope did a turf deal with him. This is Candace Pert's words in her book, Molecules of Emotion, which I recommend. This turf deal was, the church keeps jurisdiction over the mind, the being, the soul, the invisible forces of the anima animus, the spirit, for its safety and salvation. And science can have the body. And that day, I can feel you laugh with a recognition, a rift was created between the body, and the being. One was the church and the other was the science. And we then moved into the Industrial Revolution. So we started to have what's called mechanical explanations for the body's movement. And René Descartes studied clocks. He was an horologist as well as a philosopher. And he proposed that the human body moved like any other automaton via its counterweights and wheels. So from that, we've grown up with, from the last 400 years, this idea that the body is a stacked structure, bone on bone, and that the muscles are attached to those bones to move them as levers at the joint angles. That's the theory. Unfortunately, the definition of a lever is a two-bar open chain. There are no open chains anywhere in your body because everything's attached to one piece. There are no levers in non-linear biologic form. Bones don't touch each other and we're not stacked. Now, I say that and you look at me and you go, well, obviously, but it's not obvious at all because we spent the last 400 years thinking it's the basis and the foundation of bodywork, body biomechanics and anatomy. So when the fascia was thrown out, to answer your question, what is it? It was scraped away because they cut the skin open and it's all under the skin.
Yeah.
And it was scraped away to find these things called the muscles and the bones and the vessels and the organs. Now, one man, a man called John Godman, 200 years ago, set his students, a naturalist and anatomist, set his students the task not to come into their anatomy thinking there were only parts and systems, but to look at what was there. And what was there, and this is the key answer to your question, was the fascia everywhere. And he said to another anatomist, Geoffroy Saint-Hilaire, he said, everywhere is fascia, everywhere. It's immediately under the skin. It's wrapping every muscle. It's wrapping every bone. It's wrapping everything, every vessel. It's everywhere. Why is it discarded? Why is it thrown in the cadaveric bin? I'm paraphrasing John Godman, but he wrote a beautiful piece of work. And he said, I know of no greater impediment to the understanding of the fascial matrix than the newness of the idea. That was 200 years ago. 100 years later, Andrew Taylor still picked up on the fascia, the idea that it's far more than a binding, that it's far more than an inert packaging or a scaffolding. He wrote, the waters of a man's soul dwell in the fascia, and I know no greater hunting ground for disease than the fascia. This was Andrew Taylor, still the father of osteopathy 100 years ago. So what's happened in the last couple of decades, the last 20, maybe 30 years, and perhaps longer if you take in the work of Dr. Ida Rolf, for example, is this recognition that the fascia is actually far more than an inert binding. Now, my colleague John Sharkey says that the word fascia means different things to different people. If you're a surgeon, it means something slightly different to if you're a body worker or a civilian layperson that doesn't need to know these terms. And he refers to it as the singularity. Because what we're now considering the answer to the question, what is fascia? And this has huge implications for what I know you really want to talk about, which is that this singularity expresses itself in many, many different ways. So if you put your right hand facing, your left hand facing palm down, and you put your right hand onto the back of your left hand, and you move the skin on the back of your left hand, there's a gliding motion just under your fingertips. Well, that's the superficial fascia, and it's a, in the living body, it's a bit like egg white. But when you go a little bit deeper and you press into, say, the muscles in your forearm, and you press into those and they're squidgy, that's deep fascia. And then a little bit deeper, it's myofascia. It's got muscle protein in it. And then you get to the bone, one of the bones in your forearm, and that's periosteum, which is another kind of fascial expression. And then if you go deep and you really feel the bone starts off as cartilage in the embryo, which is fascia with hyaline in it, and it hardens as we age through force transmission. So bone is considered by many to be osteofascia. So basically, the fascia is everywhere. It's the fabric of our form. It's our basic building material. That's the big long answer to your question. It's everything.
And what rang bells for me was the idea that it is also soul.
I thought we'd hear that. So, well, the difficult part about this conversation is that people often say to me, do you think there are emotions in the body, or what do you think of this idea?
Like duh.
And I go, well, where else is it going to go? And the problem is, between the forces of what we might call the physical that we can see, that we've already got that completely reduced to just compression forces. We're not compression, we're tension compression. We're both. And both aspects come together to form the pattern of our matrix. And fascia is basically your physical matrix. Where we're going with this is, what does it resonate with? What does it express itself as? Or what expresses it as you are the invisible forces of you, the animus that is you. So you, for example, may be somebody, I'm not, this isn't you, Kate, but let's say, for example, you're somebody who's very unhappy, who doesn't like life, who goes around scowling a lot, frowns a lot, squints eyes, folds shoulders forward, brings chin down, grits teeth. Those are all going to show up in your physical matrix. Why? Because those actions and attitudes are gestures in the matrix. And the matrix is, John Sharkey's words now, the tissue of temporality. It's the time tissue. And it literally, it is a bit like a clock in a way. I think Rene Descartes was a bit misunderstood. But anyway, it is like a clock in that every stroke of that clock is in this tissue. So your body right now, whatever age you are, whatever age, is telling the story of your life and your life only, writ large, in your tissue matrix of self-expression. So you self-assembled as an embryo. You brought yourself into being. You responded to life inside out, outside in, right the way through your life to this point. And this is what it looks like, Kate's version. And this is what Joe's version looks like. And anyone who's listening, give yourself your name and say, this is what my version looks like.
And the exciting thing, the really exciting thing for me was, because back in the last century, dear, when I went to school, I learned about fascia. Well, what the model I was given was of Reich and Alexander Lowen, and it was all about the musculature, a very male, white male European version of getting either over rigid in the muscles or over collapsed. And that was the kind of basis of the archetypes that we were taught at that time. But what we were learning was that the fascia is infinitely adaptable in class, so that it's by touching and moving the fascia, we get to change that structure, that temporality.
Timing. Accumulation of time and timing. So your fascia is your organ of accumulation and organization, but it's also the thing, it's your largest sensory organ. So it's also the thing that senses where you are in space at all times. So that's called our proprioceptive sense. But what's now known, and this is the most recent research, is that we have something called haptic perception. And this just thrills me, because, you know, I was ridiculed by my teachers. And I mean ridiculed, for suggesting that fascia was a sensory organ. And that was after I'd done my homework with Robert Schley. And interestingly, I had the piss ripped out of me, basically, saying, just because there's nerves in the fascia doesn't make it sensory, quote unquote. And that the person that said that subsequently apologized to me. But unfortunately, they said it in public and apologized in private. And without realizing, they actually served me very well, because it infuriated me so much that I wrote the book. Having done so much homework, that what is now known, Martin Grunewald is the source of some absolutely beautiful work on haptic perception. And let me just press pause and tell you what that means exactly so that everybody gets where I'm at, or not me, but where Sasha is at. A lot of people, the haptic, does that have something to do with the liver? What's that? Well, haptics are, if you get your smartphone and you look in the settings, you will find in those settings something called sounds and haptics. And basically what it means is, and you can do this with me, Kate, because we're on Zoom and we can see each other. If you put your hand out again, your left hand out with your palm facing down, and you press the back of your hand with one finger, and then you press it with two, and then you press it with three, and then you swipe it one way or the other, or you double tap it. Those are all the little movements that you put on your iPad screen or your tablet screen or your smartphone screen. And basically you talk to your screen or signal your screen through these tiny gestures, and it reads those gestures. And that's called haptic perception, because the glass face on your smartphone is a haptic interface, a sensory interface for haptics. Well, I'm not being funny. Science didn't invent us. We invented science. Just let's get that the right way around. And we've designed a phone screen that does what we do and always have done. And so what the sensory nature of the fascia is, that it is actually a sensory fabric. It has what's called, unfortunately, mechanoreceptors in it, and what were thought to be interstitial free nerve endings and are now known to be Schwann cells. Now, you don't need to understand any of that except to say that the fascia is so sensitive that it is actually the foundation of our sensory awareness. It is the largest sensory organ of the body by many magnitudes, bigger than ever understood. And Martin Grunewald's research was based on pieces of tissue as areas, and Robert Schleip and Professor Carlos Stecco have taken that and made it volumetric, so it's cubed. So however many hundreds of thousands or millions of nerve endings in a little square centimeter, it's a cubed centimeter, it's just the magnitude is beyond.
So how can we listen to the fascia? How can we understand what it's telling
you
us?
You can't not, is a better answer. You can't not listen to the fascia. And what my work seems to be about these days is revealing to people that it's already listening and you already know. So let me give you a couple of examples, Kate. You already self-assembled as an embryo. You began as a unicellular being the size of a pencil dot, otherwise known as a conceptus or a fertilized egg. And from that dot size unicellular being, you self-assembled you from that. Yes, your mother gave you food and shelter. Got that. But you did the rest. So you already know how to become. And this idea that we've got to pay somebody to teach us to become something, it's just like, really? The acorn doesn't have a PhD in oak tree-ness to become an oak tree. It's all in the acorn, all of it. And this is the grace of life itself. We already have that grace, so we already know. If we choose to sit back and recognize, cogs, put the cogs of the clock together and put them back together again. So we've been breaking it down into component parts, but now let's just remember they're all whole. We already know that we're listening. How many times do you say, oh God, that person gave me the creeps? Or, oh, do you know her face lit up when she saw me? I can't believe it. I'm so thrilled. I bumped into my friend the other day and her eyes lit up, and oh, it just lifted my spirit. That's your fascia listening to you. It's tuned. It's a pre-tensioned, pre-stiffened architecture, meaning you grow at different rates. That's the complicated stuff that we learn anatomically. But because of that, it's like, let's think of a harp. The strings of a harp are tensioned between the compression structure of the frame. The strings of you, your tendons, your ligaments, are tensioned, your skin, your muscles, they're all tensioned by the framework that's on the inside. We call it the skeleton. Let's just say that for ease on a podcast. But why we use the term biotensegrity is because the compression tension system is internal to us. So a spider's web requires an outside frame. We wear our frame on the inside and our skin over the whole lot. But we are tensioned as a tension compression architecture, not just stacked as a compression architecture. So what that means is, and this is the beautiful bit, if you had two harps in a room at either end of the room, and you plucked a particular E string on one of them and they were tuned the same, that E string and that E string only would resonate on the other harp without you touching it. So because we are basically strung instruments, we resonate according to our form, and our form expresses our gestures, and our gestures express our attitude. And our attitude, which in French means pose, yoga, pose, attitude, is our grace expressed in our physical gestures. And mine resonate with yours because we are looking for a common resonance. And we found that within 3 minutes of saying hello to each other. So we're both resonating right now. As you said, I've got goosebumps. That's a resonance. It's a resonant response. Immediately, you, me, and back again in that accord. And you think about it, the words we use, the human body.
And so just to be really specific and really grounded, and that is fascia. Those goosebumps.
They're all fascia.
A fascia.
It's all fascia. Basically, your fascia is the skin ligaments holding your skin to what's underneath, which is the superficial fascia. Underneath that is the deep fascia. Underneath that is the myofascia. Underneath that is the osteofascia. Attaching that to each other is the tendon, which is fascia. Bone to bone, keeping them apart, is ligament, which is fascia. And then we have the organs, and we now know that they are all wrapped in the interstitium, which we now know is fascia. So basically, your fascia is the building material of your soft tissue architecture.
And how does the fascia hold energy in your vision?
Same way as the strings of an instrument hold energy in everyone's vision. If you pluck one of those strings, they make a sound. If you pluck the strings of your vocal cords, they make a sound. You're a resonance field. And your fascia is resonating at the physical level, at the emotional level, at the mental level, at the, let's say, etheric or subconscious level, and at the level of soul and spirit. And you tune into those frequencies like you tune a radio. So when we get a radio in the room and you put it in front of you and you say, I want to hear classical music, you don't unscrew the radio and take all the wires out until you find the classical music, right? You get the dial and you dial in the radio frequency of classical music, and it comes through the radio.
And how can we find, because life often intervenes to keep us less than vibrant.
Hello, tell me about it.
I found occasionally.
Are you on lockdown?
So how do we keep our fascia able to resonate effectively so that we can feel where it's at? How do we stay hydrated?
Great question. Well, let's start fundamentally. Let's talk about fundamentals like water, breath, light, and sound. Let's start there. So you said hydration. Drink enough water. We're 70, 80% water. It's bound water. Fascia is basically bound water. It's liquid crystal matrix with special things in it that is, how can I say? Fascia isn't water and water isn't fascia, but fascia is the bound water of us, acting as the lubricant that has things glide. It has a lot of myo in it if it's the muscle. It has a lot of hydroxyapatite in it if it's the bone. It has a lot of hyaline in it if it's the cartilage. So it expresses how it hydrates these particular structures in different ways to make sense of our mobile form. So to keep that mobile, it must be hydrated. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean 8 gallons of water a day. It doesn't even mean 2 liters. It's about a liter to drink, but to absorb, and you really should get it from your food and healthy food. So that's kind of a given. The other thing is light. We need sunlight. And I think, you know, I did a podcast recently called Zoom Room Gloom, because I think, you know, I'm right now, you can see I've got a black background. I've got a light straight in my face. It's like this, you know, when's the headache going to come? And if I've spent 3 hours on Zoom, I've got a whole new definition of headache. And we all have, a lot of us are spending time on Zoom because that's how we're connecting with each other. Thank God I've got friends all over the world that I can stay connected with. So here's another answer to your question. If I go around frowning, miserable, upset and grumpy because I have to go on Zoom, then my demeanor will reflect that. If I sit there happy and delighted and thrilled that I'm connecting around the world because there's no way I could get to Watford today, I can be happy and smiling. So my face doesn't have lots of frown lines on it because I'm delighted to connect with you. Same circumstances, is the glass of that water that I'm drinking symbolically, half full or half empty? Same amount of water in the glass. The glass doesn't care. So here's where we have a kind of a choice. And I'm not saying life isn't hard. Trust me. You know, I've lost people very recently to COVID, and it's not funny. It's not even nothing. It's not even okay. However, the way we deal with that, as in perhaps choose the appropriate time to manage it, organize our life around giving ourselves the time to handle those emotions and giving other people the chance to understand that we're not at our best. We then create the next thing, which is the sound of a calm voice or of good music around us or of peacefulness that we need to take care of ourselves under those circumstances. Because here's the key about fascia being the tissue of temporality. It needs to do the right thing at the right time that is appropriate. If you're on your yoga mat, the appropriate thing to be doing is yoga. If you're in your car, it's not appropriate to do yoga. It's appropriate to drive. If you're sitting with a friend having a cup of tea together, it might not be appropriate to read a book. It's appropriate to have a cup of tea. I know I'm stating the obvious. But sometimes I think we drive ourselves to do, be, and become things that we're not able to animate because we think we ought to. Mm. And there is a dissonance that we're pushing ourselves beyond what's appropriate, and appropriate and proprioception are the same root. Mm. And they mean one's own self. So the fascia invites us to tune in to our already listening self-awareness and say, what's right for me right now? What's congruent? What resonates with me right now? And I don't mean, oh my God, I just sneezed. I need to take a holiday, or my eyelash is broken. I need a week off. I mean appropriate resilience, appropriate restoration, appropriate time.
So after a lifetime of being taught to ignore fascia and ignore what we need and to override and to push, how do we tune back in? Because even, you know, somebody like, even for myself, I've spent gazillions of pounds and years training and working and all this kind of stuff. And I still, to some extent, struggle with following what I need. You know, there's this obligation to do this, that, and the other, to fulfill other people's needs usually, or some other idea of what I ought to be doing with myself, is still very strong. So it's not an easy thing to listen and then respond. So how can the fascia, either by touch or movement, how can we come back into a more of a listening mode?
Brilliant. My answer to that is a phrase I have called press, pause, and prosper. And I'm right with you, Kate. I mean, I was 60 last year, and I look at my life. My father passed away in 2019. And when I was looking back through my phone at my photographs, I thought my phone had made a mistake with the listing of the dates for the images. I mean, that's how unconscious I was. I was in 7 different countries in the 6 weeks around his passing, and I couldn't work out, you know, I came home for his funeral, obviously, but I was away. I was in LA when he passed away. And I can't even begin to tell you how that traveling was sending me crazy. I didn't know. I was just doing it. I've got to be there. I've got to be there. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. I've got to do the other. And what happened when lockdown hit was I was, in inverted commas, obliged to stop. And I ironically remembered my own words, press pause and prosper. And I sat there, and what I was confronted with was the need to give myself permission to grieve. I hadn't given myself that permission. And it wasn't that nobody cared or that my friends hadn't given me that permission. It was that I hadn't made me that priority. I'm like you, I'm a people pleaser, devoted to making a difference and making things work for others. But I was going beyond my own remit and saying, I've got to, otherwise what? Otherwise the world's going to fall apart. No, it isn't. And I was absolutely obliged to learn something that part of my spiritual practice or training, which is take care of yourself first, then take care of others. Every time I get on a bloody aeroplane, they say, put on your own oxygen mask first and then help the others. And you realize that if you martyr yourself and put your children's masks on first, they're going to witness you dying. Whereas if you reach for yours really rapidly, really efficiently, you can then help everybody around you. And they don't have to help you because you're taking care of yourself. And I thought, oh, maybe that's not selfish. Maybe that's just sensible. But, I mean, I don't know what you think of this. I'm going to ask a question of you now. Do you think, and this isn't exclusive, I'm not a feminist in that sense, but don't you think women kind of come from, can I please you first, then I'll take care of myself?
I think for women of our generation, we were trained to do that. I was from my family had expectations, and I think it's not just my family, I think across the board in the 60s and 70s, we were trained to be of service to others, and in particular men. Yeah.
First.
Yeah. Because, and the implication, you know, the unspoken message behind that is you're not important.
Well, I know some very, very lovely men who would never have that. So I am not making a statement about the male and the female, but we are emerging from eras of women being the lesser sex, let's put it that way. And I know the whole pendulum swing that we had a matriarchal society, then a patriarchal society, and now we're moving into perhaps something more neutral. But this is why I'm so passionate about the fascia. The fascia is what I call the neutral servant of the body. So we've got a whole raft of education based on muscles and bones as the protagonists. And Robert Schleip called the fascia the Cinderella tissue. And if you think about it, Cinderella was the neutral servant. She ran the house, she looked after everybody, she made sure everything was okay. And let me tell you, there ain't a muscle or a bone in your body that survives without her. Not one. And she's a she for me. Sorry about that too. John Sharkey talks about dark matter of the cosmos, and the fascia is the dark matter of the inner cosmos. And just to put it into a context, when you think of building materials, let's get fundamental. We have sand. We can mix it in one way and it becomes cement, which dries after a certain period of time. So you can put it between bricks. You mix it with clay and it becomes bricks. You can make a house. You treat it slightly differently, give it a different chemical structure and heat it, it becomes glass. You can have windows in your house, all fundamentally made of sand. Same, but different. Fascia is fundamentally the neutral servant of our form. And the soup with which we self-assemble, in which we self-assemble, animates into that form, genetics and kinetics. Mm. And we self-assemble into us. And that's miraculous. Mm. animated by the spirit of whoever you are. I'm not being spiritual now, although I have a very strong spiritual practice. But what I'm saying, the spirited anima of us is what animates this tissue and makes it alive because it's moving. So what happens when we learn about this fascia and learn things to do is we learn that tiny, 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 just micro movements make a difference. So we don't have to go to our great big class, our great big run, our great big sporting event in order to hold 1 minute. My earphones dropped and I won't be able to hear you. This great big event in our lives, we actually are training the fascia in the way we sit, in the way we eat, in the way we write, in the way we climb the stairs. So what we can become aware of are our subtle gestures, our in-between gestures. That's one.
I think this is so, so interesting. So just to really emphasize that to make the change possible and doable, it's in the detail, it's in the way that we sit. It's in the small gestures. Yeah.
How many times do you think, I'm going to go and make a cup of tea? Yeah? I'm going to go and make a cup of tea. I'm just going to make a cup of tea. And you think, where's the tea bag? Where's the cup? Where's the kettle? Put it on. Imagine just for a moment that the making of that cup of tea was a ceremony, like a Japanese tea ceremony. And you carved out the space with the same quality of importance and attention as you would look after a very special guest. You would perhaps choose the right cup. You'd take a little bit more time to make sure it was the best tea, the one that you really love. You add a little bit of time. You don't have to go mad and take a week to make a cup of tea, but you can add a little bit of time and thought and attention to the way you make that tea and turn it into a little sacred gesture, a little interval. Oh, excuse me, I've got a hiccup, drinking bubbly water. And then there's a grace to it. And it's a kind, some people call it mindfulness. I sometimes struggle with that term, Kate, because in yoga we're talking about mind chat and chitta-vritti and in the, getting rid of that. So mindfulness is, I want to be mindless about, I don't want to be thinking about it. But just giving yourself attention for the way you make a cup of tea or the way you serve your meal or sitting down to your computer to do some emails. Do you just sit there feeling the victim of the emails you've got to answer, or do you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to give myself 55 minutes to do these emails. And at 55 minutes, I'm going to get up and have a little walk for 5 minutes. And I'm just going to have a yawning stretch session like any self-respecting cat or dog would when they've been sat in a chair. Or I'm going to get myself a glass of water and just go and sit in the sunlight for a minute. For 5 minutes, just 5 minutes. So what you can start to do is, in a micro way, is claw back 5 minutes on the hour. And I know some of us are super busy and we're handling two kids and a business and life and the this and the that. I get it. And I know people literally that go to the bathroom to give themselves that 5 minutes. But there's something about playing a pause for your personal prosperity. Just the breath. And that becomes a very fat 5 minutes. A very fat, it's over in a heartbeat, but it's a very fat 5 minutes. And if you can just give yourself three of those a day, you make a difference. You know, like this is like, you know, the diet that says you've got to change everything, empty all your cupboards, start all over again, rigorously control what you do and report to somebody every day, versus thinking about what you're eating when you put it in your mouth and realizing and listening that you've had enough or that you don't like that.
I think very often we prefer to outsource solutions to some fancy authority rather than doing what is in front of our face, but is potentially more difficult for us to achieve, to actually give ourselves a moment.
We love being part of communities. I do too, you know, and you join a community that help you do things, but there's something between giving over the authority outside of yourself and completely going introvert and thinking, oh my God, it's all my fault, I've got it all wrong, I can't cope, and not asking for help. What we're looking for is this in-between place where we can have some help, but help that honours or supports us, that support that honours our ability to make a difference and small differences, and just take care of yourself first, so no one else. That was the key for me, was giving myself permission to just tell everybody that I get up at 7 and actually get up at 6 and give myself that hour. And even if I'm just sitting there staring at the wall or meditating or drinking a cup of tea or listening to the birds, that's my time.
Beautiful.
And my family seems to like it.
Yeah. So how do you know that? How do you know that your fascia likes it?
That's a brilliant question, Kate. Should have seen that coming. How do I know my fascia likes it? Well, here's what I do. I track it. I keep a diary and I give myself, this sounds very formal and intellectual, but it's not. It's part of my training, is that you just keep a diary and I have an idea, like the hypothesis. You know, what if I get up 1 hour earlier and give myself an hour every day? I'll try that for a week, see if it works. It drives me mad and it doesn't work, I stop doing it. If I discover that it's absolutely amazing and my whole day is different because I've given myself an hour, what I'm saying is, try this hypothesis. I'm going to give myself a gift of this pause, and you make up your own pause, whatever your pause is. Might be 3 minutes, might be 30 minutes, whatever it is for you. And you just give yourself a period of time, like a day or a week, or a day is not really long enough, but a week or a month. If I just do that for myself, it's a minute, microscopic change. What if I do, then, and I put it in my diary. I keep a diary. I'm just somebody, nutcase, that keeps a diary. I love it. And I just scribble like 3 words in it. I just give myself the joy. All I've got to do is remember to write my journal. And I write those 3 words or 5 words or 10 words or whatever it is before I go to bed. And it's my little ritual. And then I look back over the month and I've discovered that if I do 5 to 10 minutes of movement after any Zoom call, like it's booked in, it's dialed in, Zoom call, bathroom, movement. Move. I find that I don't get the headache. I drink a glass of water when I get up with the electrolyte in it. I find I can get dehydrated. Little tiny gestures like that. I find, like we know, if you do this, if I had 3 cups of coffee a day, I get the jitters. Easy. If I had 1 cup of coffee, I don't get the jitters. If I have 2, it depends. But guess what? I have a ritual now. A cup of coffee once a day. Or not. And I make it sound so simple and complex. Oh my goodness, I know it's not. But what I had to really appreciate was that my fascia gets, my fascial system, my matrix, my innerness can be very easily overwhelmed when I get very high. I'm one of these people that plans 3 times a week in the gym, 3 times a week of yoga, 5 times a week. You know what I mean? I've got a whole timetable and I beat myself up because I can't reach that perfection. And we talked about archetypes before we started this. And every one of us has the archetype of the saboteur. And I think that saboteur's favourite job is pretending to be a superhero. Perfect. And you set it up because then you've got to fail, then you're a bad person, then you're right about being a bad person, then you're right about being a lesser human being, and then everybody doesn't, you don't deserve anything, and you can beat yourself up. And it's such an easy out for giving up. And the truth is, it's actually quite hard to put yourself first even for a little bit.
So
guess what? Your fascia will love you because you're listening in.
Yeah.
Am I hungry? Am I thirsty? What do I need? You don't have to go mad.
So I think what I've learned from you, because I think I'm a pretty integrated kind of person, actually, Joanne.
I think you are too.
Pretty integrated.
But
I was, up until we spoke this morning, I was still thinking about fascia as an organ, even though I knew about the periosteum and the blah, blah, and the whole under the skin. I was thinking about it mechanically. So when I'm asking you, how do we take care of this? You're talking about doing the things that make you feel good, about micro pleasure.
The other thing I'm going to say, and this is, I wanted to share this with you. Dr. Leon Chaitel wrote a beautiful paper called Humming My Way Back Home. And it was all written about an event when he was in Dublin, Ireland, teaching at the National Training Centre, which is John Sharkey's college in Ireland. And I'm on faculty there and I taught the same group. So I had reason to be working with the same people he was working with. So that's how I got to know about it. And this particular article, Humming My Way Back Home, Dr. Leon Chaitel, if you just put that into Google, you'll get it. He talks about how humming is so valuable. Now, hear me out. From a fascial point of view, your tongue is a complete continuity with the pericardium of the heart. So when you hum and make beautiful sounds, that resonates through the fascia of your entire, well, your entire body actually, but let's just stick with the neck for now. Your vagus nerve is running through there, your main veins and arteries are running through there, all your cranial nerves, your brain, your eyes, your senses, everything is resonating, and that resonance goes to the heart, and that resonance goes to the connected heart tissue, which is the veins and arteries of the whole body. So it's a really fast track, all of you, first thing. Second thing is, if you think of the heart, because embryologically we grow heart first, we're heart-centered, literally and symbolically. When you're humming, and you're humming happily, you're humming a resonance. You're humming your heart string. It's a strong instrument. To me, it's the conductor of the whole orchestra. So have a think back to what we said earlier. If that harp is singing one tune, the harp at the other end of the room is singing another, the same one. So if you tune your body literally by humming it happy, trust me, this is ridiculous how this works. It's what we do with toning and tuning and humming in yoga. That's why we chant.
Any spiritual practice will
exactly
verify this.
Exactly. Yeah, this is not new. However, the obviousness is through here, and I've got my fingers either side of my sternocleidomastoid muscles, all through there, the alar fascia is also tensioned. Everything in the body is pre-tensioned. It's called a pre-stiffened architecture because of the way it grows. So it's tension and compression. So it resonates with a strung instrument, a cello. The body of the instrument is the compression part and the strings are the strung part. With a drum, the skin is the tension part, the body of the drum is the compression part, but they unite in a particular pattern, species specific, to make our non-linear biologic form as a volume. We're a round thing in space. So moving that around and resonating that when we hum, very subtly hums the tongue, which hums the heart.
And would this sort of humming and the slowness and the making small rituals out of every day, will that help us recover, say, after abdominal surgery or after pelvic surgery and that kind of thing?
It does two things. One, it calms the nervous system down. That's the main thing. It calms the nervous system right down and it accumulates in the tissue. So in other words, if you do it once, you feel good. If you do it twice, you feel good. If you do it for a few minutes every day, it accumulates. So that calms the nervous system down, which means we're less in our sympathetic fight, flight, adrenal drama. And we gradually bring ourselves more into our parasympathetic ability to relax. So that's that part of the strong instrument. If you've got scar tissue, which is in your fascia, because the whole fascia is connected, there's one fascia in the human body, not 100 fascias, there's one. You're made out of one piece. We don't go into hospital for a limb bolt-on procedure when we're embryonic. We grow ourselves out of one piece of this fabric. It's all connected to everything else. So imagine this. Let's get a sense of what scar tissue is. Imagine you put on a stocking, a body stocking over your whole body. And over that, you put a unitard over the whole body. And over that, you put a fluffy onesie over the whole body, a nice thick one. And over that, you put a neoprene wetsuit. So you've now got these different textures, these different densities of fabrics, one over the other. They're not really layered in the human body, but let's use this metaphor to pretend they have different qualities. And they all move on each other. And they're all pretensions because they're stretched over you. Now, if that were to be cut and stitched together, let's say across the abdomen, can you imagine that you wouldn't have the same gliding motion between those fabrics that you had before? That's what scar tissue does. If we very, 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 very gently massage it, we signal to the fascia, because it's a living tissue, to stop binding and start gliding. Mm. We signal it that we know it needs care, we know it needs repair, and this is how we talk to it, through very subtle touch, and you know that from your biodynamic work. And so we work with the scar tissue very, 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 very gently, super gently. It's like, how can it make a difference? This is too gentle to even be there. Mm. But it does. And there's a book I'll give you the reference for. And that what that does is it starts slowly, incrementally, micro-wise, to reinstate the glide to the optimum possibility. Mm. You know, that cut may have saved your life or your baby's life if it's something to do with childbirth, and you needed to have it. But what can happen is the way it's all stitched back together again can inhibit movement in the shoulder or the knee or the foot, and it's not related directly to that surgery, but that surgery might be the cause. And there's a lot of research now into how we can help the scar tissue, and this comes back to taking care of ourselves again. You always clean your teeth, probably always have a shower or a bath, some form of self-cleansing practice. You can just add a minute or two to that, to really beautiful, suitable oil for you that you rub into those scars very, 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 very gently. Mm. Every day, they start to change. They start to repair themselves to the extent that they can, and magic happens. And the book that I'm going to give you the reference for is by a very dear friend and colleague of mine, Jan Trawartha, and Sharon Wheeler. It's called Scars or Scar Tissue and Biotensegrity. Okay. And John Sharkey and Graham Scar and Leonid Blyum and me and obviously Jan and Sharon and Wilbur Kelsick, and there's a couple of other authors. I can't think of them all this minute, but it's a beautiful practical book. It's for practitioners, but there's some absolutely gorgeous rich stuff in there as to the newest research on fascia and scar tissue. And Jan Trawartha is director of the British Fascia Symposium, so she has access to all the research in the world.
Joanne, our time is up.
Oh my goodness.
I know, and I made the mistake of asking people what I should ask you, and they're going to have to go and read the book because we've run out of time. Sorry, guys. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And the new edition is out on the 27th of April. So
right, yes. Your book. That's Can you give us the title and where to get it from, please?
It's Yoga, Fascia, Anatomy and Movement. It does have the word yoga in it. It is oriented around yoga, but that gives me an excuse to talk about spirit without sounding like a nutcase. But it's not really a yoga book, but it's threaded through yoga as the movement expression. And it's available through Handspring Publishing. And if you go to my website, joannavison.com, you get 10% discount off the new edition. If you order it, you go straight to the Handspring website, but it gives you access to my author's discount.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You can get 10% discount on Joanne's book from her site, which is Joanne, Joanne, Avison, Avison.com. And I've also put a link in the notes for the other book that she's just mentioned, which is snappily entitled Scar Adhesions and the Biotensegral Body. So you can find that as well. Let me know how your fascia's doing today by popping over to Instagram, where I'm Kate_Codrington. And don't forget to share this with a friend who might find it helpful, maybe a yoga mate. They have those handy little buttons that make it really super easy. You just bash the button and send off the link. And I'll look forward to seeing you very soon for another Inside Adventure. Goodbye!